Jayarada Madhova Kunjabi Hare. Jayarada Madhova Kunjabi Hare. Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Vadadare. Gopi Jana Malabha Yiri Vado Dhavati Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Panachari Yamuna Tira Panachari Jai Hurad Umadava Kunjabi Hari Jai Hurad Umadava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Palaba Giri Badadadi Gopi Jana Malaba Giri Badadadi Yasodanana Brajajana Ranjana Yasodanana Brajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Hurad Amadava Kunjabi Hari Jai Hurad Amadava Kunjabi Hari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravatkacharya Sutada Satoshi Shimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachandana Devaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Garadha Shivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gop Govinda Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Maturam Ki Jai Jagannatha Swami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Shivani Lasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hadabha. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Om Gana Tivadanda Shaganjana Shlakaya Chakshuran Minitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So continuing the study of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and as I mentioned before, when we're reading the Bhagavad Gita, we're actually coming directly in contact with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said that the purports that he wrote in the Bhagavad Gita were his devotional ecstasies. So it's very important to read the purports. So now I'm going to go to the Bhagavad Gita. Here we go. So we are on the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and we are continuing with text 36. And of course, the study of the Bhagavad Gita may take many months, especially when we get into the later chapters. The verses are going to require much more explanation. So, text 36. Give me a second. Papam evashrayad hasman hotvaitan atatayanaha tasmin narhavayam hantum Dhartarashtran Sabandhavan Swajanam Hikatam Hotva Sukina Shamamadavaha. Papam, vices, eva certainly ashrayat, must come upon. Asman, us, hatwa, by killing a ton, all these, atat tayanaha, aggressors, tasmat, therefore. Na, never, arha, deserving, vayam, we, huntum, to kill. Dhritarashtran, the sons of Dhritarashtra, sabandhavan, along with friends. Swajanam, kinsmen, he, certainly, katam, how, hatwa, by killing, sukinaha, happy, syama, will we become, Madhava, O Krishna, husband of the goddess of fortune. Translation, sin will overcome us if we slay such aggressors. Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and our friends. What should we gain, O Krishna, husband of the goddess of fortune? How could we be happy by killing our own kinsmen? So look at the word-by-word translation. There's that word we keep seeing in many of these verses. Swajanam means my people. And as we've discussed before, a devotee doesn't see my people, he sees Krishna's people. And yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vana pashyati. Everyone is Krishna's person, and everyone is our person. So when we make this distinguishing, when we distinguish between our people and others, these are ours and those are others, that is Maya consciousness. So Prabhupada explains in his purport that there, according to Vedic injunctions, there are six kinds of aggressors. One, a poison giver. Two, one who sets fire to the house. Three, one who attacks with deadly weapons. Four, one who plunders riches. Or five, one who occupies another's land. And six, one who kidnaps a wife. Such aggressors are ones to be killed, and no sin is incurred by killing such aggressors. Such killing of aggressors is quite befitting any ordinary man, but Arjuna was not an ordinary person. He was saintly by character, and therefore he wanted to deal with them in saintliness. This kind of saintliness, however, is not for a kshatriya. Although a responsible man in the administration of a state is required to be saintly, he should not be cowardly. For example, Lord Ram was so saintly that people even now are anxious to live in the kingdom of Lord Ram, Ram Raj. But Lord Ram never showed any cowardice. Ravana was an aggressor against Ram because Ravana kidnapped Rama's wife Sita, but Lord Ram gave him sufficient lessons unparalleled in the history of the world. In Arjuna's case, however, one should consider this special type of aggressors, namely his own grandfather, own teacher, friends, sons, grandsons, etc. Because of them, Arjuna thought that he should not take the severe steps necessary against ordinary aggressors. Besides that, saintly persons are advised to forgive. Such injunctions for saintly persons are more important than any political emergency. Arjuna considered that rather than kill his own kinsmen for political reasons, it would be better to forgive them on grounds of religion and saintly behavior. He did not, therefore, consider such killing profitable simply for the matter of temporary bodily happiness. After all, kingdoms and pleasures derived therefrom are not permanent, so why should he risk his life and eternal salvation by killing his own kinsmen? Arjuna's addressing of Krishna as Madhava, or the husband of the goddess of fortune, is also significant in this connection. He wanted to point out to Krishna that as husband of the goddess of fortune, he should not induce Arjuna to take up a matter which would ultimately bring about misfortune. Krishna, however, never brings misfortune to anyone, to say nothing of his devotees. Several things I want to explain here. We're going to go back to the beginning of the purport. First of all, when you punish aggressors, the aggressor gets benefited. Why is that? Because the aggressor or criminal or person who commits vikarmic activities, it's going to get a reaction. So when you punish them, you give them the reaction. Instant reaction or a very quick reaction. They're going to get it anyway. Plus, when you punish them, you protect society. And in this particular case, as we mentioned before, it was very important to have a saintly king like Yudhisthira in charge of the society. So people who commit any of these six items you see here on the screen, there are six kind of aggressors, should be punished for their own benefit and for the benefit of protecting others. Now, I'm going to go over all these six because I'm going to show you that the Kurus committed all six of them, especially Duryodhana. Okay. One, poison giver. Remember I told the story yesterday, those of you who are watching, how Duryodhana poisoned Bhimsen, tried to kill him. Bhimsen was thrown into the river, went down, was bitten by the Nagas, recovered, and then he was received by the Nagas, who were associates or in the same family as Kunti Devi, and he was given this Rasa Kunda and became more powerful. So first thing, one who sets fire to the house. Now that's another story in the Mahabharata. What did the Kurus do? There was this place called Varnavat, and the Kurus arranged for a beautiful house to be built for the Pandavas. But unfortunately, in spite of the house being beautiful, it was made of lac. You know, lac is a substance that's extremely flammable, and then there was also, I guess, ghee or oil, and it was a super flammable house. And so their plan, the Kuru's plan, the Duryodhana's plan, along with Shakuni and company, was to actually burn the Pandavas and their mother alive. Whew. Terrible, terrible, terrible plan. And so Pandavas were sent there, supposedly on vacation, and they caught wind of what was going to happen because of Uncle Vidura, who sent them a message. Uncle Vidura also arranged for a tunnel to be dug so they could escape. And so they escaped this house that was burned down. And in the meantime, the person who constructed the house, along with his family, got burnt. So everyone thought the Pandavas were dead. So in other words, that was another sin that the Kurus committed. Third one, one who attacks with deadly weapons. I mean, they were continually attacking the Pandavas and getting ready to do that in the battle of Kurukshetra. Four, one who plunders riches. I mean, the gambling match in which Yudhisthira lost everything. And there was cheating because Shakuni, good old Uncle Shakuni, because he was the brother of Gandhari, and he used loaded dice. Loaded dice means the dice are weighted in such a way that an expert person, when he throws them, will land in the way that the expert person wants. And so they were plundering riches and also occupying another's land. Like Indraprasht. They won Indraprasht from the Pandavas in the gambling match, and they were occupying their land. And six, finally, they were kidnapping the wife. Kidnapping the Pandavas' wife. Not in a direct way. Actually, there's several kidnappings that were involved in this particular case. But one kidnapping was this gambling match, that stealing the wife, winning the wife of the Pandavas over in a gambling match, which is completely nonsense. And also, there was another instance where they actually directly tried to kidnap Draupadi. That's when they called for Jayadrath. Jayadrath, of course, it was the husband of Dushala. Dushala was actually the daughter of Dhritarashtra. And Jayadrath was encouraged by the Kurus to kidnap Draupadi. And so Jayadrath went there when the Pandavas were just getting ready for their final year of exile, in which they had to go incognito. And he grabbed Draupadi and put her on the chariot. Fortunately, the Pandavas were able to catch up with him, and we know they gave him a very nice haircut. They left him with five little tufts of hair, signifying the five Pandavas, and later on, Jayadrath got killed by Arjuna in the Battle of Kurukshetra, and we're not going to tell that story right now. But anyway, the Kurus and their cohorts did all six of these things. And so for the good of society, they needed to be punished. And I mean, that was the proper punishment. And for their own good, they needed to be punished. So it says here that saintly persons are ready to forgive. Of course, Prabhupada did say, and the Vedic literature say, that one of the qualities of a Brahmin is forgiveness. However, two things. First of all, the Brahmin is not in charge of the government. And the Kshatriya's duty is to punish the wrongdoer to protect society. And secondly, the Brahmana has the right to forgive any offense against himself, but not against society, or against another person, or against a woman, or any of the living entities supposed to be protected, children, women, old people, cows like that, and sannyasis like me. We're meant to be protected. And so, I guess I'm old, an old person, so I'm supposed to be protected. So, but who will protect society from me? That's another question. So, therefore, the Brahmin, when he sees that others are threatened, then he can act very strongly. Like in the case of Vena, there's one king named Vena who was acting improperly, considering himself to be God. Then the Brahmins actually got rid of him by mantra. They didn't have to pick up weapons or anything like that, but they got rid of him by mantra. And that was very, very good. So the Brahmin is, when someone else is being offended, you can't forgive on behalf of someone else. You can forgive on your own behalf. Someone offends me, okay, no problem, you know, I'm praying for you. Someone offends you, I'm going to protect you. This is a very, very important point. So Arjuna, yes, if he had just been the person offended, fine. But because his brothers were offended, his wife was offended, come on. There's no question of forgiveness on his part. There's a question of actual dharma. What to speak of Krishna's order and Krishna's plan. So anyway, so this is not misfortune. Of course, Arjuna, because he's using the word swajana, he's thinking it's misfortune for him because he won't be able to enjoy with his relatives after he wins the kingdom. And we mentioned that before last night in regard to Facebook, because everyone wants to enjoy with their friends and exhibit their opulences to their friends. Remember I mentioned last night, people go on Facebook, they exhibit their latest hairstyle, not me, they exhibit their latest dress. I see that all the time with my disciples, unfortunately, and with others. So that is called ahankara. If you don't know what ahankara means, have someone else translate it for you. Okay, let's go on to text 37-38. Yanyapyate na paschanti lobo pahat chetasa kulakshaya kritam dosham mitra drohe chapatakam katam nageyam asmabi paparasman nivartitum kulakshaya kritam dosham prapasya virjanardana yadi if api even ete they na do not pushanti see loba by greed upahata overpower chetasaha their hearts kulakshaya in killing the family kritam done dosham fault nitridrohe and quarreling with friends cha also Patakam, sinful reactions, gatam, why, na, should not, gyayam, be known, asma, be he, by us, papat, from sins, asmat, these, nivartatum, to cease, kulakshaya, in the destruction of a dynasty, kritam, done, dosham, crime, prapashyadhi, by those who can see, Janardana, O Krishna. O Janardana, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends, why should we, who can see the crime in destroying a family, engage in these acts of sin? So Prabhupada explains that a kshatriya is not supposed to refuse to battle or gamble when he was so invited by some rival party. So this is one reason why Arjuna should fight. Another reason is the kshatriya is not supposed to refuse to lay down the law, because the people who have to be punished are his family members. Now you see this in the modern day and age, and I'm not going to use names, I'm not going to be political here, that if someone, let's say, commits some crime and he happens to be the buddy of a prime minister, president, whoever, see, I'm not making direct reference, then this person gets let off, pardoned. Or, as we've seen in the case before, the judge is influenced, or the Department of Judgment is influenced, so the person doesn't get prosecuted. So Arjuna is actually, it's like nepotism. Yes, it's like nepotism. Nepotism means favoring one's relatives. That Arjuna is not ready to lay down the law because they're his relatives. So here's another point. That a kshatriya, when he's challenged to battle or gamble, he has to participate in that. Arjuna could not refuse to fight because he'd been challenged by the party of Duryodhana. In this connection, Arjuna considered that the other party might be blind to the effects of such a challenge. Arjuna, however, could see the evil consequences and could not accept the challenge. Obligation is actually binding when the effect is good, but when the effect is otherwise, then no one could be bound. Considering all these pros and cons, Arjuna decided not to fight. So Arjuna thought the effect was not going to be good. And we mentioned this before as far as obligation. One of the first classes, we talked about Grandfather Bhishma's obligation, because he tried to keep his obligation to support the king. That had a bad result. So that obligation would not be binding. So in this particular case, the obligation would have a good result, but Arjuna doesn't understand it at this particular point. Punishing miscreants has a good result. Forgiving them does not have a good result, particularly when someone has done something so heinous as the Kurus had done. So anyway, so Arjuna is thinking like this, you know, it's not going to be a good result, you know, everybody's going to be killed, and Krishna had another plan. And also Krishna's plan was to get rid of all the demonic forces on the earth, because all the demons had taken birth on the earth in Kshatriya families. So there's also a bigger plan behind the whole thing, not just establishing a saintly king or the good versus evil, but actually cleansing the earth planet. It was time for a cleansing. Okay, next verse is Kulakshaye. Pranashyanti kula dharma sanatana dharmi nashte kulam kritsnam dharmo bi bhavat yuta. Kulakshaya, in destroying the family, pranashyanti, becomes vanquished, kula dharma, the family tradition, sanatana, eternal, dharma, religion, nashte, being destroyed, kulam, family, kritsnam, whole, adharma, irreligion, abhivavati, transformed, uta, it is said. With the destruction of a dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. And Prabhupada said, in the system of Varnashram institution, there are many principles of religious traditions to help members of the family grow properly and attain spiritual values. The elder members are responsible for such purifying processes in the family, beginning from birth to death. But on the death of the elder members, such family traditions of purification may stop, and the remaining younger family members may develop irreligious habits and thereby lose their chance for spiritual salvation. Therefore, for no purpose should the elder members of the family be slain. This is Arjuna's argument. However, there's a counter-argument. The counter-argument is, in this particular case, the eternal family tradition has already been lost. And whatever tradition they had, the Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, who was the elder in the family, and Grandfather Bhishma, who was contaminated at this particular point, is already lost. So it requires a rebirth. If you understand anything about the Battle of Kurukshetra, basically the whole dynasty was destroyed. Everyone. Even Arjuna and the Pandavas were not genetically members of that dynasty, although they were considered members of the dynasty because, all right, let me explain, because Pandu was married to Kunti. But none of Kunti's five children were genetically connected to Pandu, the husband. Now, why is that? Because Kunti had the children, and Kunti was from another family. Kunti had the children from different demigods. You know, Yamaraj and Vayu and Indra and the Ashwini Kumaras. Two from them. So basically, it required that the dynasty be finished because the dynasty had been polluted, contaminated. So Arjuna's statement is true, but in this particular case, it doesn't apply. Everybody understands that? Very important. Destruction of the dynasty, yes, it's true, is vanquished. But if your family tradition is non-eternal, is not dharmic, I mean, what is the family tradition right now, or in this particular case, this scenario of the Kurus? It's one of envy, it's one of exploitation, it's one of adharma or irreligion. So we want that to be destroyed. It's already irreligion. So we need a rebirth. You know, sometimes when you get old, you need a rebirth, right? When your car gets old, you need a new car. So the society needs to be reborn at this particular case. So Arjuna's argument's right, but it's wrongly applied. So he's not using wrong arguments. He's just not applying them in the proper context. Next verse, Adharma Bivavat Krishna Pradushanti Kulas Tiha Strishu Dushtasu Varshneya Jayate Varna Sankaraha. Adharma, irreligion, Abhivavat, having become predominant, Krishna, O Krishna, Padushanti, become polluted, Kulastriya, family ladies, Trishu, by the womanhood, Dushtasu, being so polluted, Varshneya, O descendant of Rishni, Jayate, comes into being, Varna, Sankaraha, unwanted progeny. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Rishni, comes unwanted progeny. Very, very important point, and actually true. But religion is already prominent in their family. And basically, women can't do anything about it. Actually, in this particular case, it wasn't the fault of the women. The men had become polluted, and the women weren't able to stop them. The same thing happened in the Ramayana, which is actually interesting, that Ravan certainly was very polluted. But Mandodari, his wife, was not. She knew better. So the women were more intelligent than the men. So, but generally in the Vedic society, it's important for the women to be protected by good men. And if there's no good men, then the women will have to learn to protect themselves, which is happening in modern society right now. Good population in human society, the basic principle for peace, prosperity, and spiritual life, progress in life, The Varnashram religion's principles were so designed that the good population would prevail in society for the general spiritual progress of state and community. Such population depends on the chastity and faithfulness of its womanhood. Its children are very prone to be misled. Women are similarly very prone to degradation. Therefore, both children and women require protection by the elder members of the family. This is not a slight on women. It's a slight on men, because men can cheat the women all the time. And Prabhupada was very explicit about this. By being engaged in various religious practices, women will not be misled into adultery. According to Chanaka Pandit, women, this is material women, not spiritual women, are not very intelligent, therefore not trustworthy. So the different family traditions of religious activities should always engage them, and thus their chastity and devotion will give birth to a good population eligible for participating in the Varnashram system. On the failure of such Varnashram Dharma, naturally the women become free to act and mix with men, and thus adultery is engaged in at the risk of unwanted population. Irresponsible men also provoke adultery in society, and thus unwanted children flood the human race at the risk of war and pestilence. Actually, the men actually want women to be loose, so they can exploit them and not take responsibility. Prabhupada was very, very clear about this point. So in the Vedic society, you know, having wanted progeny, wanted children, and in the Vedic society, when the man and woman would engage in sex, they would actually pray for the proper type of soul to take birth. And so Arjuna here is very concerned about women being protected, which is actually a valid concern, a very valid concern. And certainly after the battle of Kurukshetra was over, Yudhisthira made that arrangement. And although many of the women were left without husbands, they were protected in various ways. You know, women can be protected by a son or his father or children, like their husband, or society. Prabhupada actually wanted that, you know, society to protect the women, protecting the women, protecting the old people, like me, protecting the cows, and, you know, protecting the earth, all these, and children, of course. These are very important points. And now we see, in the name of freedom, the women are exploited. So anyway, next verse. So Arjuna is not saying false things, he's just misapplying it to his circumstance again. Shankara narakaya iva kulakanam kulasya cha patanti pitaro yesham lupta pindo dakakriyaha. Shankaraha, such unwanted children, Narakaya, make for hellish life, Ava certainly, Kulakinanam, for those who are killers of the family, Kulasha for the family, Cha also, Patanti fall down, Pitaraha, forefathers, he certainly, Esham of them, Lupta stop, Pinda of offerings of food, Udaka and water, Kriyaha, performances. An increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. Now, Arjuna here is referring to something called pinda, that this is a material thing, not Krishna consciousness, because when one passes away, one's children or one's relatives perform this ceremony to actually bring the soul to a higher condition, either in his next life or in a place called Pitri Loka, a heavenly place like that. So there's this ceremony to do that. There's an interesting story in the Mahabharata about a particular living entity, a particular Brahmin called Tatukarna, who didn't want to do that for his ancestors. He actually, part of that is getting married. And his ancestors were going to suffer, and eventually he agreed to get married. And there's a whole story about that in the beginning part of the Mahabharata. So what do we do about that? We can save our ancestors by becoming Krishna conscious. One becomes Krishna conscious, like Prahlad Maharaj. He's Krishna conscious. He saved his father, Aranyakashipu, and many, many generations, backwards, forwards, horizontally, were saved. So that's how we take care of that. So as far as unwanted population, Duryodhana was certainly an unwanted population. I mean, the Kurus were certainly unwanted. Everything that, the family was already corrupt. Arjuna is using good arguments in the wrong situation again. According to the rules and regulations of fruitive activities, there's a need to offer periodical food and water to the forefathers of the family. This offering is performed by worship of Vishnu because eating the remnants of food offered to Vishnu can deliver one from all kinds of sinful actions. Sometimes the forefathers may be suffering from various types of sinful reactions, and sometimes some of them cannot even acquire a gross material body and are forced to remain in the subtle body as ghosts. Thus, when remnants of prasadam food are offered to forefathers by descendants, the forefathers are released from ghostly or other kinds of miserable life. Such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional life, remember, Prabhupada says, and those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. So if you're a devotee, don't have to do it. However, if you're in a society where people will criticize you for not doing it, as many of you are, then do it anyway, but you don't have to do it. Technically, you don't have to do it because you're chanting the Lord's holy names. You're liberating everybody, liberating the whole universe by the chanting. One who's engaged in devotional life is not required to perform such actions. There it is. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of misery. It is stated in the Bhagavatam in the 11th chapter, 11th canto, 5th chapter, text 41. Devarshi bhutapta nrinam pitrinam nakinkuru nayam rini charajan sarvatmananya sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam kharirurityakartam. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, that is an absolute fact. As I mentioned, if you're in a society, people will criticize you for not doing those things. Just do it so people won't criticize the devotees. But do it in a devotional way. In certain countries, which shall remain nameless, Fiji, for example, they do this ceremony by leaving out on a plate, not offering to Vishnu, but leaving out on a plate under a tree what the person liked to eat before he died, or what the person liked to do. So they would leave cigarettes and fish on a plate, thinking that's the right way to honor your forefathers. Well, guess what? Your forefather went to hell because he was smoking cigarettes and eating fish, eating meat. So you're helping him stay there. That's true. And then ultimately, the person who eats all those things you leave under a tree, probably a dog. So it's not, that's not the Vedic system. You're supposed to go to a Brahmin and do the sacrifice. I mean, if you're not a devotee, you have to do this. And you feed the Brahmin and you offer food to Vishnu Prasad. That's the only way to do that sacrifice. And that's why it's necessary to have people who do it for you. If you're not a devotee, if you are a devotee, don't worry about it. So, next verse. This is very interesting. Doshari thai gulak nanam varna sankarakara kahi usadhyante jati dharma gulak dharma shashvataha. Doshai, by such faults, itai, all these, kulak kranam, or the of the destroyers of the family, varna sankara, of unwanted children, karakahi, which are causes. Utsadhyante, are devastated. Jati dharmaha, community projects. Kula dharma, family traditions. Cha, also. Sasvataha, eternal. By the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition and thus give rise to unwanted children, all kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. Good argument, wrong circumstance. Community projects for the four orders of human society combined with family welfare activities as they are set forth by the institution of Sanatana Dharma or Varnashram Dharma. Sanatana Dharma means eternal activities. that relate to the soul. The Varnashram Dharma means basically dividing society up into the social orders and spiritual orders, like one's a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, one is a Brahmachari, one is a Grihastha, one is a retired person, and or one is a sannyas, are designed to enable the human being to attain his ultimate salvation. Therefore, the breaking of the Sanatan Dharma tradition by irresponsible leaders of society brings about chaos in that society, and consequently, people forget the aim of life, Vishnu. Such leaders are called blind, and persons who follow such leaders are sure to be led into chaos. And that describes Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. Therefore, you need a change. Obvious. And Arjuna is just not getting it at this point. He's thinking, he's bewildered. He's thinking it will create more irreligion by leaving the present people in the government. You know, it's like you leave the fox in the hen house, is a typical example. It's better than getting rid of the fox. You know, it's just it doesn't make sense, but he's bewildered by family sentiment. It's like saying, you know, don't disturb the fox. You know, at least the chickens will be peaceful. I just don't get Arjuna's application of his arguments. But this is what happens when one's in Maya or illusion. But this Maya or illusion that Arjuna is in is directly arranged by Krishna, so the Bhagavad Gita can be spoken. Try to remember that. So Arjuna is misapplying things. Utsana kula dharmanam manushanam janardana narake niyatam vaso bhavat ityanu shushuma. Utsana, spoiled, kula dharmam, of those who have the family traditions, manushanam, of such men, janardana, Krishna, narake, in hell, niyatam, always, vasa, residence, bhavati, it so becomes, iti thus, Anushushma, I have heard by disciplic succession. O Krishna, maintainer of the people, I have heard by disciplic succession, those whose family traditions are destroyed dwell always in hell. So, guess what? Family traditions are already destroyed. It's already hell. Arjuna bases his arguments not only on his own personal experience, but on what he has heard from the authorities. This is the way of receiving real knowledge. One cannot reach the real point of factual knowledge without being helped by the right person who is already established in that knowledge. There is a system in the Varnashram institution by which before death one has to undergo the process of atonement for sinful activities. One who is always engaged in sinful activities must utilize the process of atonement called the Prayaschitta. Without doing so, one will surely be transferred to hellish planets to undergo miserable lives as a result of sinful activities. If you're a devotee, don't have to do prayaschitta. Actually, it's stated in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that the best type of atonement is the chanting of the Lord's holy names. In other words, you don't have to engage in some, like they did in the Christian world, some self-flagellation, you know, beating yourself with a chain or torturing yourself like that, atone for your sins. You hear this many times from preachers. Atone, the day of judgment is upon you. Atone, sinner, atone. No, chant the Lord's holy names and Krishna takes care. Hum tvam sarvapapayibhyo mokshayishyami masu chaha. So, the point is, if one wants factual knowledge, one has to apply the knowledge. That is jnana and vijnana. Vijnana means to apply what you've learned, not just theoretical. So Arjuna's problem is he's not applying the knowledge properly. His vijnana is off. His jnana is fine, but vijnana, realization, not so good. Next verse. Aho batamahat papam kartavya vasata vayam yadraja thukkalopena hantam swajanam udyataha. Aho, alas, bata, how strange it is, mahat, great. Papam, sins, kartam, to perform, vivasataha, have decided, vayam, we, yat, because, Rajasuka Lobena, driven by greed for royal happiness, huntum to kill, swajanam. There's that word again, kinsman. You'll find this word, swajanam, used so many places in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. It's my people, my people, my people, my people. Udyataha, trying. Alas, how strange it is that we are preparing to make greatly sinful acts driven by the desire to enjoy royal happiness. We are intent on killing our own kinsmen. If it was someone else's kinsmen, Arjuna wouldn't have that problem. So one has to be ready. Even if one's relative is a criminal, you have to be ready to have him treated fairly by the law, even if you're in charge. If you're a judge, for example, and your, let's say, son comes up and he's committed some crime, of course, you shouldn't judge him. That's a conflict of interest. You turn it over to someone else. You don't let him off scot-free. And so Arjuna was like the judge who wanted to let his friend off scot-free. So purport, driven by selfish motives, one may be inclined to such sinful acts as the killing one's own brother, father, or mother. There are many such instances in the history of the world, but Arjuna, being a saintly devotee to the Lord, is always conscious of moral principles and therefore takes care to avoid such activities. Obviously, we don't kill our brother, father, and mother like that. I mean, obviously, we don't do that. And Prabhupada here is making direct reference to this person, Aurangzeb. Yeah, one of the Mughals who actually destroyed so many temples and killed so many Hindus. And Aurangzeb actually imprisoned his father, Shahjahan, and killed his brother to take over the kingdom. And he destroyed the whole dynasty, actually, by killing all the relatives except for himself, killing all the other Mughals who may have been his competitors. But as far as Arjuna's case is concerned, he would have to see people equally. He's still seeing I and mine or my relatives. Text 45. I think this is the last text we'll read, and then we'll take questions. Yadimam apratikaram shastram shastrapanayaha dhatarastra ranehanyus tanmek shemataram bhavet. Yadi, even if, mam, me, apratikaram, without being resistant, a shastram, without being fully equipped, shastrapanayaha, those with weapons in hand, dhatarastaha, the sons of Dhritarashtra, Rene on the battlefield, Hanyu may kill, tat that may for me, shema taram, better, bhavet would be. Better for me, if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield. Whew. Sentimental. It is the custom, according to Kshatriya fighting principles, that an unarmed and unwilling foe should not be attacked. Arjuna, however, decided that even if attacked by the enemy in such an awkward position, he would not fight. He did not consider how much the other party was bent upon fighting. All these symptoms are due to soft-heartedness resulting from his being a great devotee of the Lord. So his soft-heartedness is good. That's fine. Sentiment is not bad. But there's something higher than the sentiment, which is the intelligence. That's why, according to this very nice metaphor, we have to control the senses in the mind with the intelligence. And the metaphor is as follows. There's a horse. There's actually five horses. There are reins. There's a chariot. There's a driver. There's a passenger. We are the passenger. I am the passenger. We are passengers in the car. And so the driver is the intelligence. The reins are the mind. The horses are the senses. Excuse me. And the chariot is the body. So who is supposed to control this chariot? Under the direction of the driver. That's the driver. Intelligence. Intelligence is the cool heart, cool, not cool hearted, but cool-headed ascertainment of one's goals in life being directed by your super soul. You know, very cool. And the mind is just like accepting and rejecting things. You know, the reins are just going all over the place. And the horses are going all over. The senses are going all over the place. Just like one time, many years ago, I got on top of a horse. And this is like a wild horse. No one told me that, even though I had gone horseback riding before. And the reins, I was unable to control the reins, and the horse understood, you know, I wasn't the greatest horseman, and I ended up in the next county. I had to jump off the horse to escape. So it's the same way. We have these senses that are just dragging us, and the mind is just saying, you know, I'd really like to go here. Really like to go there. Wouldn't that be fun, here and there? And the intelligence is not strong. The driver is just like, was like me on the horse. And the horse knew exactly that I wasn't strong, I wasn't that trained up. The driver's saying, oh my God, these reins, they're pulling too hard, and the horses, they're just, oh my God, I give up. And the driver's going everywhere willy-nilly. And that describes our situation. So having soft-heartedness, which is fine for Vaishnava, but then we shape our activities based upon intelligence. Intelligence means to understand what our goals are. And then based on those goals, we can either ignore the mind or basically, even better, use the mind and focus on those particular goals. Just like in the horse races, sometimes you have the horses with little blinders by their eyes so they can just focus on going straight ahead and winning the race. Because if they look at the other horses, they'll just get bewildered. Or scared, or something like, or spooked, as they say in horse racing. Okay, so it is time to see if any of you have questions. So we go back to all the pictures of all you nice Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis. So, any questions or comments? Radha Padma, you have a question, following in the footsteps of your husband. So, what are your questions?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Please Hare Bhav.
A humble obeisances. Gurudev, we were talking about this Shraddha ceremony.
Yeah.
If we say that if by chanting of the holy names, the family members or they are liberated, but at the same time in Srimad Bhagavatam, we study that whatever we do, we have an action for our karmas.
Yeah.
Then what happens? Like, there's this liberation on one side and karma
is eradicated for a devotee. And you will eradicate the karma for your relatives too. Even by parabdha chanting, that is accidental chanting, meaning something else, you get rid of all that wonderful karma that you had. So that's basically much better than the shraddha. You call it shraddha ceremony because you don't pronounce the A. But any shraddha, I pronounce it shraddha because that's the proper pronunciation. That's better. That's the best type of prayaschitta. And that's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the sixth canto. Let me remember that verse. Tasmat sankirtanam Vishnu jangamangavang hamaanghasam hatam apikavir koravya vijakantaka nishkirtam. Interesting verse. That the sankirtan is the topmost form of atonement, prayaschitta, whatever. Even for yourself and for your relatives. We have to have faith in the holy names. However, because you live in a society where people will criticize you if you don't do the shraddha ceremony, you can do it. Advaitacharya did the shraddha ceremony, but he also fed Haridas Thakur with the shraddha plate. But it's not necessary for Vaishnavas, because you're already liberating your ancestors and your relatives.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Thank you. So, I saw
Guru
there.
Maharaj,
Yeah. Okay.
my question is how to check
Well, it's Praneshra. You're
the
always in the dark.
sentiments.
You're always in the dark, Praneshra. I knew you were on lockdown, but I didn't know you were in solitary
Actually,
confinement.
I just
What's
Gurudev,
that?
my question is how to check the sentiments that I have is on illusion, they are self-hearted, soft-hearted.
How to check the sentiments. That's actually very good. You don't have to check your sentiments. You can have the Society of Devotees and reveal your sentiments. I mean, it's natural to feel soft-hearted. I mean, it's complete. Arjuna's feelings were good. Like a judge in a court case, let's use a simple court case. Let's say someone was speeding and they got it. We have a devotee here who was caught speeding. She was doing 100 miles an hour. Now, for those of you who think about kilometers, that's about 170 kilometers an hour, 180 kilometers an So she had to go before the judge, and the judge was certainly soft-hearted, and the judge said, felt sorry for her, but he still had to lay down the law. He still had to, of course, she's getting off pretty easily. I mean, if I had done that, I would have lost my license, but because I wasn't a young lady, then I didn't lose my license. Then, because she was a young lady, she didn't lose her license. So that's an example of sentimentality. Okay? So we just use our intelligence. Make it strong. What's the right thing? Just think about what is the right thing to do. And sometimes the right thing is the same thing as we feel. And sometimes the right thing to do is the opposite of how we feel. So we should always do thing the right thing, proper. What is the right thing is for the best interest of everybody, including ourselves. That's the standard. All right? Praneshra from India.
Thank
Thank
you,
you.
Vijay.
Thank you for joining us from India, So, Rishikesh, I think you have a question.
Yes, Gurudev. I just wanted to understand the action of Bhishma Mahatma, Bhishma Dev.
Yeah.
He was in full knowledge, transcendental knowledge of the position of Krishna and the Dharma and everything, but still he did not protect Draupadi. Why is it like that? I mean, why?
In the previous class, I explained that, first of all, he was eating food cooked in the kitchen of Duryodhana, and as a result, his mind became wicked. That was one point. His mind became wicked, and I even mentioned that he and Kripacharya, as well as Dronacharya, became possessed by entities. That's mentioned in the Mahabharata. And I did tell that story the other day. Another reason is that he was very proud of always keeping his promise. His promise was to never disagree with whoever was the king of Hastinapur, to always support the king of Hastinapur. He had promised that to his father. When he was arranging his father's marriage, his father was Shantanu. His father's marriage was Satyavati, whose son was supposed to take over the kingdom, which never really happened for a variety of reasons. For two reasons, his pride in keeping his promise, which led to irreligion, and also the contamination which he, as a Mahajan, was subjected to because he wasn't careful enough about his association with the modes of nature. Particularly, Prabhupada mentioned eating impure food. You are what you eat. When you eat impure food, your consciousness becomes affected. I'm not only talking about non-veg food, but any impure food prepared by someone who has impure consciousness, it affects the food. There was actually a scientific study done one time about this idea of consciousness affecting food. Once upon a time, a person made some rice, just normal rice, and he put the same rice in the same batch in three different sealed hermetically sealed containers. In one container, he took the container up in front of him and, let's say, spoke and thought positive thoughts. In another container, he was like neutral. In another container, he was negative, thinking very hatefully. I mean, it's hard to hate rice, but he was thinking in a hateful way. And so after about 2 weeks, he looked at these three containers. The container to which he had positive thoughts, the rice looked almost as good as the day it was put into the container. The other container, next container, the neutral container, the rice was a little bit fuzzy with some growth on it. And the third container, the rice was a mess. It was all gooey, smelly, and all sorts of other nice things. So consciousness affects matter, and it affects all the cells in our body. You know, if one has positive consciousness, one will be healthier. It's very simple. Prabhupada actually said, you know, if you like the positive consciousness towards the food that you eat, you actually will be healthier. You should like what you eat. If you don't like what you eat, you're not going to digest it. So anyway, consciousness affects matter. And quantum theory accepts that particular point, that, you know, that consciousness affects subatomic particles. It's quantum mechanics. Benny, you're interested in that? I can talk about that at some other time. But, you know, just the act of measurement or consciousness affects particles on the subatomic level. So, what's another question? Hey, Hare Krishna.
Hello. Number of agencies. Well, glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much. Good to see you too. Thank you for doing this wonderful Gita classes. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I have a question regarding the six grasses that were mentioned earlier. And in Krishna book, Krishna, when he let Kaliya go, although Kaliya had a poison that he was emitting. And I know that because of his wives that they stopped him from killing him. But I mean, if that wasn't the case, he would have definitely killed Kaliya.
Yes.
Right. Okay, I was just thinking about that because I was like, hey, he was emitting poison, so he was saved by his wives.
Yeah, that was his nature. He was emitting poison. His wives were pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They prayed for him. And ultimately, Krishna had another mission for him, too. Krishna sent him to Fiji. Those of you watching from Fiji will understand what I'm talking about. Krishna sent him to Fiji to protect the devotees. One interesting thing happened in Fiji was that once upon a time, there were some people who were inimical to Krishna consciousness, and they threw a firebomb at our temple. And it burned half the temple. Of course, not the deities, but the fire brigade, that's the firemen, came there and they protected the temple. Then after that, the five people who participated in that act of violence against the temple died by different causes over the next 2 years. You know, someone died in an automobile accident, someone died from disease. All five of them passed away. And then the native chieftain, because Fiji at that time was actually ruled by different chiefs of different villages. One of the main chiefs had a dream, and Kaliya appeared to him in the dream and said to him that if you mess with my devotees again, I'll kill every one of you. So Kali became a devotee. You know, we all did so many things before. You know, isn't it? And so Krishna will forgive us if we repent. Krishna was willing to forgive Duryodhana. Remember, Krishna gave Duryodhana opportunities. At the end, he even told Duryodhana that the Pandavas would accept five villages. And you can continue ruling the kingdom. And Duryodhana said, I'm not going to give the Pandavas even as much land as can fit on the head of a pin. So I mean, Krishna really gave him a lot of opportunities, whereas Kaliya, he surrendered pretty easily. I mean, I don't know if it's easy, Krishna smashing all your heads, but it was just one time, you know. Krishna didn't have to do too much. He just had a rasa dance on Kaliya's head, and then Kaliya surrendered. So it's a different. Duryodhana had a lot of good advice throughout his life. He was exposed to Krishna. He saw Krishna's universal form when he tried to capture Krishna, when Krishna tried to make sort of a truce between all the parties. Then Duryodhana tried to capture Krishna. Krishna exhibited his universal form. And Kaliya, and sorry, Duryodhana still didn't surrender. Whereas Kaliya, he surrendered at first instance, his first encounter with Krishna. This is a little different. Okay? So, one more question. And tomorrow night we're going to have the same thing, same time, same station. Every night it's like,
Gurudev.
uh-oh, I hear that familiar voice. Nalini asks, okay. And Radha Padma is covering her face. Oh no, it's him again. So, Nalini Khan, so what is it?
Hare Krishna, Gurudev, regarding the Shraddha ceremony, so
Yeah.
can we say that it's a devotional service, one of the devotional service activities, because we are doing it for the departed?
If you do it in devotion and use it for preaching, yes.
Gurudev, one more question, can I ask or should I leave it for tomorrow?
Now you're going to ask.
Gurudev, in case of Narada Muni, we know that from the scriptures that he was Gandharva and then he became a maid servant and then became Narada. So how about Arjuna? Like, is he in his constitutional position or do we know anything about his
No, Arjuna is always Arjuna. Arjuna is always one of the associates of Krishna. He never became Arjuna.
Okay,
Bhagavad
just like Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai,
Yeah, they are
like they are.
always there. That's constitutionally whoever they are. They are constitutionally Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai, always the mother, always the father of Krishna. The other mothers and fathers of Krishna are expansions of them, such as Vasudeva and Devaki.
Okay, and
Nanda
Gurudev.
and Yashoda, there's no question that they became Anandajad. They're eternally. It's like Radharani. Radharani didn't become Radharani. She's eternally Krishna's Adi Shakti.
So is Arjuna there in Brajalila as well?
Yes. Actually, one of the coward boys expands as Arjuna. And I forget which one right now. And
Okay.
even one of the coward boys, one of the coward boys even expands as Garuda.
Yes, you mentioned other day that
I
one.
mentioned that previously. So, yes. These are eternal associates. Arjuna is always with Krishna. When Krishna appeared as Narayan Rishi, then Arjuna was there as Nara. When Krishna spoke to the sun god Vivaswan, millions of years before this particular instance of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was there listening to it.
Okay.
These are eternal devotees.
It same for rest of the Pandavas?
We are not on that same level, but you can become eternally related to Krishna if you become perfect.
Okay. Gurudev, how about other Pandavas?
Pandavas are eternal associates of Krishna.
Okay, Gurudev.
They're not ordinary. Not ordinary persons. They actually appeared in Chaitanya Leela. Bhavananda Roy was Pandu and his five sons, including Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy is considered to be an incarnation of Arjuna, as well as Vishakha. Anyway, located there. So,
Thank you, Gurudev. Hare
thank
Krishna.
you. Any other questions? Anyone else have questions tonight? Or this morning, as the case may be in New Zealand?
Hare Krishna.
Arjuna, oh yes, here's from Mother Tulsi. Sent me a message. Arjuna in Krishna's pastime is Arjuni Gopi. So you in Krishna's pastimes, Nalini Kanta, are Nalini Kanti Gopi. No, that's a joke. Please don't take that literally. That would not be appropriate. I think I see Radha Padma, she's laughing at that joke. So, it's good to see everybody. I mean, we've got people in New Zealand, we got people in America, people, let's say, wow, a lot of people. Veda, it's good to see you. Fiji, do we have anyone in Fiji, right? All the Fiji Wallahs are not there, unfortunately. Best teacher in the world is there, Champa Galata. Okay, I think we should end, so we'll see everybody tomorrow evening. Thank you very much. All glorious to Divine Grace. Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.